Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this, though, is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. I'm joined today by the founder of RH & Co, Rin Hamburg, for a conversation about the role of good copywriting in business marketing. Rin, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's really good to have you here. So before we dive into that conversation about copywriting, tell us a bit about RH & Co. Who are they? What do they do?
Okay. So the short answer, we're a copywriting agency. But actually, as anyone who knows anything about copywriting will tell you, you know, that's actually still fairly broad, even within kind of marketing. So how we talk about what we do is that we work with expert-led businesses. We help them to clarify and communicate their message, and then we help them establish their authority using the power of the written word. So the kind of three elements of that is expert-led businesses. Most of the clients that we work with, they may have a product or a service to sell, but they more than that, they're selling the expertise within their business, their knowledge, their skill, their experience. So we're helping them to kind of get that out there. And in terms of clarifying and communicating messaging, that's obviously part of the sort of brand building work. You know, a lot of the people that we work with, what they do is either very, very complex. So it's not very easy to say, I do this. We're helping them to kind of work out how to say that, how to kind of express the value proposition. Or it may be that they do something that lots of other people are doing, in which case it's sort of how do we say how they're different. So that's kind of quite interesting. And then, as I said, establishing authority. So that's taking that expertise that's within the business and putting it into words, really, because if you've ever spoken to an expert, you'll know that they're not always very good at articulating that. So that's what our job is.
Great. And I understand, because actually how I came into contact with you guys is I'd heard much about the blogging and the website content frameworks that you build. So I guess to do your job, you've had to develop some of those frameworks. Can you tell us a bit about them?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a great believer in getting better with every time you do something. I'm good at pattern spotting. Pattern recognition seems to be one of those things that I'm fairly good at, which I think makes me a good editor. And so over the years, obviously blogging myself for clients and then now running the agency and having my team do that and working with a lot more clients, I've sort of noticed sort of key things that keep coming up. So I thought, well, how can we slightly shortcut this? So the blogging framework is very much that, as a framework. And essentially we took, it was a way of taking ideas for blogs and making them make sense in the sort of inner strategy. Because when you're sitting there in front of a blank piece of paper and going, right, what should we write about? There's so many topics you can cover. There's so many kind of ways of approaching each of those topics. And you want to really know that you're being strategic and you're not just sort of pulling titles out there going, well, yeah, we could write about that. So I kind of took the classic buyer journey and I reimagined it as being a tool for content marketers to kind of fit ideas into. So, you know, if somebody is very much at the beginning of their journey, they're very much, you know, traditionally you'd say, you know, problem unaware, they don't know what the problem is. You're going to write very, very different content to if they're aware of what that problem is and they're kind of searching for a solution, right through to the kind of more bottom funnel stuff where you've got, you know, somebody's literally trying to decide between your firm and another firm and they need sort of the more nitty gritty granular detail. So yeah, we basically just created this framework that we use internally. And the goal is to move people along it. Cause I think the tricky thing and any kind of brand marketers out there will know this is that there's this real pressure to deliver leads, but what does that actually look like? Because if somebody's right at the top of the funnel, then it's not realistic to say, you know, pick up the phone and talk to us. They're not going to do that. They're not going to book a demo. But they might, I don't know, sign up for more information for a newsletter or something like that. So it helps to set goals and targets. And our ideal situation is ultimately to create what we call buyer journey blog chains, where you can really lead somebody from the beginning to the end of their journey. through the blog. Now, obviously, depends on, you know, there's a lot of a lot of businesses where you need to then hand that lead over to the sales team, but actually we, for a lot of our clients, we create blog content that supports the sales team, so blog content that they can actually send out to help get people over the line.
And just to kind of give an indication of how you see that progression, what are the kind of headlines, the difference between a blog that maybe sits at the top of the funnel versus one that sits at the bottom?
In a nutshell, it's how much you talk about yourself. Right. You know what I mean? So right at the bottom of the funnel, the reader wants to know, well, how do you approach this? What are you going to be doing? What are your processes? They actually want to know that kind of detail, because say they're trying to decide between, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, you know, anything. You know, you've narrowed it down to two, and you're thinking, okay, well, which one do I want? And you sort of need to know the detail. And it can be a bit exposing to kind of really lay yourself bare like that. But actually, what you want to do is attract the right people for your business and put off the wrong people. So it doesn't matter if people read, say, your version of it and a competitor's version, and they go with the competitor, because that means that genuinely that was the right decision for them. And I'm probably not popular with salespeople, but I'm not about getting a sale over the line at all costs. Right. I'm about getting the right person to the right business, because it makes everybody happier, including the business. I don't want people coming to us and say, could you blog for me? And actually, we're not the right fit for them, because it's just going to end in tears somewhere down the line, possibly mine.
Well, let's hope not. Let's move away before the tears come. Let's talk more generally about copywriting. Mm. What would you say is the importance of good copywriting and content marketing in the world of business marketing generally?
It's a very good and very big question. I would separate those two things out, copywriting and content marketing. Copywriting being sort of that much broader how we articulate things. So copywriting can cover everything from, you know, ad copy on a billboard, very conceptual creative work, through to, you know, the much, dare I say it, drier kind of tender writing, kind of report writing and that sort of thing. So it does cover quite a broad spectrum. Mm. But the way I look at the basis of all copywriting is being able to express ideas in words. Having ideas is one thing, but being able to communicate them through to another human being is actually really, really challenging, because we sit there with our own context. We understand our businesses. We understand the worlds we operate in, but our audience doesn't necessarily have that same understanding. And so we have to work out which words are going to connect with them as quickly as possible and get us the right results. So for me, that is why copywriting is so important. And then content marketing, it's similar in many ways, where it sort of builds on that foundation. Actually, content marketing, includes all sorts of content. So it could be, video content, audio content, all the rest of it. Again, you're probably going to have words in there in some way. But I think the goal of content marketing, especially in B2B marketing, is education. Mm-hmm. It's really adding value. It's not about selling. Yes, of course, ultimately you want to get a sale from it. But there's a degree of, as I said, educating people, helping them to understand the context you're working in, helping them to move through that customer journey. And ultimately, when they're making that buy decision, they're making it with a real understanding of what they're doing. And it just makes the sort of sales and onboarding process that much easier.
Okay. And staying with copywriting then for a bit, we're obviously hopefully coming out of the end of the pandemic now. Do you think the role of copywriting has changed as a result of the pandemic?
I would say that there's two things always with any kind of marketing. There's always the kind of the foundational truths on which they're built, which I don't think do change all that much. I mean, kind of selling and marketing, persuading, it's all based on human psychology, and that does shift as sort of society moves on. But really, that's much more foundational. But in terms of kind of how that plays out, yes, I definitely think the pandemic, it stopped face-to-face, obviously.
Sure.
And I think where a lot of organizations relied very heavily on kind of old school sales, where they were, going to conferences and meeting people and having lunches and golf days and all the rest of it, kind of going to trade shows, they suddenly weren't able to do that in the same way. And they suddenly went, okay, well, how do we do this online? You can, to a degree, do networking online. Of course, you can still do, you know, telesales and all the rest of it. But I just think it helped people to understand that there's this whole world of digital out there where you can use that so well. And of course, in order to do that, you need to be able to use words. When you're face to face, you can use 1,000 words and it's nice and quick and easy. You've got a captive audience. When you're online, when you've got that digital, you need to use 100 words or less than 100 words. So you've got to be much sharper in the way that you speak. So I think the pandemic helps us to understand that there's this massive opportunity, but it also kind of made us realize, yeah, you've really got to be very succinct in the way that you communicate.
And do you see those observations then having an impact on copywriting over the course of the next of the coming 10 years, the next decade? You know, do you think that's the way that copywriting will be evolving business marketing going forward?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's hard to make predictions, isn't it? I mean,
especially on a podcast, because we can come back and listen to you in 10 years' time and say, you were right.
you were right, you were wrong. I think one of the gradual evolutions I've definitely noticed is a kind of we've gone towards more casual language generally. So where businesses used to write much more formally, that's already softened a lot. And I think the pandemic did accelerate that, because, you know, suddenly we were seeing into each other's homes, you know, on Zoom calls, and we were suddenly seeing people as human, especially again in the B2B world. It's easy to think of, you know, your kind of target audience, your kind of who you're trying to sell to as a business, but actually they're still individual people. So I think we're thinking more as people. I think that will continue to evolve. The thing is that as we go further, one of the interesting things I was thinking about was AI. And I know this is a big, you know, hot topic, and, you know, can AI really write copy and all the rest of it? And I did see an advert the other day. It really annoyed me. It said something like, produce high quality content in minutes. And I was like, that is not true. It's that classic thing of, you know, good, fast, cheap, all the rest of it. But there, machine learning and AI, however you want to define it, that is going to impact on how we use language. You know, even now I can be writing something in my Google Doc and it will suggest the end of a sentence, and I'm like, oh yeah, I quite like that phrasing, we'll do that. You know, so there's little things, or being able to do optimization by plugging your content into a tool and it tells you how many times you should use a phrase or not. So I think we'll see more of that, but I think that will just boost our creativity. I don't think, certainly not yet, that you know, the machines are as creative as we are. They don't have emotions. And I think because content and copywriting relies to a greater or lesser degree on emotion, I think AI will just support us to dig deeper into our own humanity in order to create really, really effective words.
That's how copywriters work with AI. How should copywriters work with business marketers, or indeed the reverse? How should business marketers work with copywriters to get the best result?
That's a really, really good question. I think probably my biggest thought on this is to not see copywriting as like an end deliverable. You know, not just see it as like, oh, we've done all the thinking, we've done all the planning. Oh, can you quickly sort of chuck this copy out? Because actually, if you're articulating, say you're looking at a website project, sometimes somebody will come to us and they've got the website planned. It's been essentially designed, built, everything's there. It just needs some words plugged into it. Now, that's doable. I'm not saying it's not doable. But actually, the way that the words appear on the page, how they're laid out, the sort of that hierarchy of information is really, really important. If you haven't got words, then the designer's kind of, they've sort of got one hand tied behind their back, really. It sort of needs to be collaborative. And certainly in terms of the sort of foundational copy, where you're really articulating brand voice and brand messaging, I always think it's easiest to start with words. Because if you think about it, if you've got to brief a designer, a copywriter and a developer, you need words to do that. So start with a copywriter, and then the copywriter will be able to articulate for you what your value proposition is, who your audience is, all of those things. You can then just hand that over to the designer and the developer. It'll save you hours of work kind of briefing them in. So I'm not saying that we're the most important, not in the least bit. I think I'm a very big believer in, you know, the UX and UI. It's so, so important. The colors that you choose, the fonts that you choose, the imagery that you use, all really essential. But don't leave copy to the end. It's not the easy last thing. oh yeah, and that idea that everyone can write copy is, you know, probably should be addressed. There's a really interesting article on Medium. I can share it with you. You can share with your audience, but it's fantastic. And it's very, very sarcastic. You know, everyone's a copywriter, right? And it's absolutely fantastic. Really,
do send that to me. And what I would do is we'll put it in the show notes for this episode.
For sure. It's by somebody called Claire Barry. And I love it because it really does highlight, I mean, it's very tongue in cheek, but it does highlight this idea that people think everyone can write. And that's sad because I'm not trying to, you know, big us up and saying we're more important than we are, but actually it's like anything, the more you do it, the better you become. So most people can write to a degree. I was chatting to somebody about this the other day. I must remember who it was who said it. They talked about the difference between everybody can write and anybody can write. And I love that because
that is nice.
Not everybody can write, but anybody could. If anybody put the effort in and thought about it and practiced and studied and trained and had a great editor and all the rest of it, anybody can be a good writer, but not everybody is.
I love that's very true. And I think there are a lot of similarities actually with marketing more generally. Again, it's something that everybody, it somehow doesn't seem to have the... It doesn't have the aura around it that something like accounting does, where, mm-hmm. you know, automatically people think that, oh, it's accounting, I can't do that. Whereas with marketing and writing, it tends to be, the gates seem to be a bit more open.
I think it's because when it's done well, it's really seamless. It looks easy. It's like ballet. Mm. You watch somebody do ballet and you go, gosh, isn't that beautiful? That's nice and easy. You just sort of waft your arms around, surely.
You can't say the same of double entry bookkeeping.
Exactly. Most people hate numbers.
What about you, Rin? What has been your personal career journey? How have you gotten here?
A very sort of long and winding road, to be honest. You know, it depends how far you want to go back. I always wanted to be a writer. I wanted to write novels. I wrote my first short story when I could write, basically. But sort of, you know, through cynicism and teenagehood, decided that it probably wasn't going to make me any money. So my sort of grand plan was I was going to become a millionaire by the time I was 30, then I could retire and write novels. So that was the idea. So I thought I'd go into business. So that was fun. So I did a business degree. I studied Japanese, which was great because I got to spend a year in Japan. But it was while I was at uni, I then discovered journalism and realized I loved it. I won a couple of awards for my writing. So that kind of gave me the kind of confidence boost I needed. So I went into journalism, and I think that's probably really helped me because without wanting to reveal my age, that was slightly before the sort of internet type days. And so when I then became freelance and then sort of businesses wanted my skills more and more because the internet was blossoming, people would do, you know, suddenly everyone had a website. They were like, oh, blogging, it's not now this thing that, you know, travelers do, you know, on their gap years and blog for their families. It's suddenly it's a thing you can use for business. But businesses didn't necessarily know how to do it because they were sort of coming at it from a we want to sell perspective, which is not especially helpful. So actually the journalism skills that I could bring to the table in terms of understanding what people want to read, what's going to engage them, how, you know, what they actually care about, that was useful. And it sort of went from there. So yeah, I sort of freelanced for a long time and then got too busy and sort of thought, well, I could just put my prices up or I could start turning away work. And I thought, why don't I get a couple of freelancers to help me out? It took a long time for me to work out that was an agency. But yeah, we've grown and grown since then.
Cool. Well, how are you getting on with your plans to be a millionaire?
Failing miserably. I'm pretty sure that you can earn more as a freelancer than you can running an agency, certainly when it's only 5 years old. But no, I really love it. It's funny how it's all come full circle. You know, my business degree, you know, which I really enjoyed marketing when I was doing my business degree, and how that's kind of tied in with the journalism, and the two skills have come together. I love running a business. I love my team. So there's 8 of us in the business. It's just really fun. And I think because I'm the kind of person, I like to constantly be learning. So there's always a new challenge. There's always something else we can be aiming for. So, you know, no 2 days are the same.
For people who are listening to this and thinking, hey, I wouldn't mind being the founder of a agency or alternatively, you know, I wouldn't mind, I'd be quite interested in getting into the writing space. Do you have a tip for them? You know, just one, he said unreasonably, you know, just a tip for something that maybe they could consider.
So which one? Founding an agency or being a writer?
Okay, two tips there. Okay. One for me.
Because they're such different things, because I think that's probably a real tip, you know, that kind of covers that whole thing, is that if you are running an agency, you are doing an awful lot less of the doing. So the skills you need to run a business are very different than the skills you need to do a thing. So actually a good book on that subject is The E-Myth, or The E-Myth Revisited. I can't think of the... I thought it was on my bookshelf, but I can't see it. And that looks at the, what does he call it? The practitioner turned entrepreneur, I think he calls it. And this idea, and he kind of gives the example of a lady who's really good at baking cakes, and her friends are like, oh, you should open a cake shop. And she's like, okay, I will. And then she does. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm baking cakes, but now I've also got these like 25 other jobs because I'm, you know, running the shop and I'm doing the accounts and I'm doing the marketing and all that stuff. So, you know, just the people management of it alone, you know, understanding how to do recruitment, knowing, you know, there's so many things. So they're definitely different. In terms of being a writer, practice makes perfect. You got to write. You got to start somewhere. So if you've never done any writing before, start a blog just for yourself on something that you're really passionate about. And also read a lot, see what's out there, and read in an intelligent way, read in an analytical way, you know, work out, try and break it down, try and see it as a formula. You know, how many subheads are they using in that blog post? What do the subheads look like? How do you read it? Do you scan it? Do you read from beginning to end? What's attracting you? If you lose interest, where did you lose interest? Why did you lose interest? So really analyze it, because, you know, yes, it's about creativity, but more often than not, it's just about working out what's good and just being better than the next person. So yeah,
great. That's helpful. Thank you. You might have covered it actually, because you referenced a couple of different pieces of reading material already. But one of the things I try and ask all of the people who come on this podcast is for some recommended reading. So, you know, for business marketers that are looking for the next book or article to read, it would be great, wouldn't it, if it was on the topic of copywriting or content marketing. So what would it be?
So there's a couple of quite a good sort of foundational intro to copywriting, which kind of covers a very broad spectrum, is Persuasive Copywriting by Andy Maslin. He founded Sunfish, but he's now gone on to become a novelist, which is, you know, making me very jealous, but he's great. As I said, it's very... if you want a grounding in the basics, that's a really, really good place to look. Okay. I'm just reading at the moment a book called Strong Language by Chris West. So far, I'm really enjoying it. He's got a really nice way of sort of simplifying how you come into the idea of kind of brand messaging and voice and language. I like a lot of his ideas. Okay. But, you know, a lot of the interesting things I sort of pick up around copywriting are... on sort of LinkedIn, just, you know, looking at people's posts, because obviously copywriters are, you know, good at writing LinkedIn posts. So Vicky Ross is somebody I follow and really always enjoy her posts. And she shares some really good examples, especially of the kind of more creative copywriting, advertising copywriting. And then there's Nick Parker. I can't remember his agency, but he created Voicebox. It's all about brand voice. So he's a very clever guy who sort of, again, he's come up with this framework about how you articulate brand voice. So definitely two people I'd follow.
Brilliant, thank you. And if people have liked what they've heard, how can they get in touch with you?
That's a really good question. I mean, luckily I have a fairly unusual name and I named my company after myself. So, you know, it's quite useful. So it's just Rin. The difficulty of spelling it. So Rin is just R-I-N. Hamburgh is H-A-M for mother, B-U-R-G-H. So you Google that, you'll pretty much find us, whether it's our website or LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram or pretty much anywhere else.
Rin Hamburgh, it's been great talking to you today. Thanks very much for your time.
Lovely to speak to you. Thank you.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Rin Hamburgh. And thanks to our technical man from Through the Eye, Andrew Gratian. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.